You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Purple Daily is daily Vikings entertainment. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die.
I will ride with this group.
Seriously, man. Please.
And away we go.
That's right, KOC. Purple Access is a go. It is Judd. It is Ross Brendel at the controls, contributing as always. And it is Tyler Fornes, our buddy from Vikings Wire, also the First in School YouTube channel, does some great work. If you're not paying attention to Tyler right now, you're missing out, because there are few who are as involved in the draft as Tyler is. Does an outstanding job with that. But today, gentlemen, I want to get to a talker because there's been so much focus on the draft this week. I want to get to this talker. I want each of us to throw out the Vikings player through free agency that they've just signed, who we are most excited about. Give your reason why. And then, because free agency continues on, but it's, as far as impact moves, largely done, I want each of us to also give a grade so far. Free agency, obviously starting last week and now has run essentially its course through 2 weeks. Forno, let's start with you. The player that you're most excited about, followed by an overall grade for what the Vikings, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah in particular, has done.
My favorite player is Andrew Van Ginkel, the outside linebacker. And it's when you look at the old New England Patriots defenses, and then when you look at what Brian Flores constructed in Miami, one of the biggest keys was versatility and guys who could do multiple things, play multiple roles. So you don't necessarily have to have super specialists, but if you have specialists, you can utilize them to their max ability, which is one of the reasons why I love the Ivan Pace signing last year. And I thought it just fit well because Flores understands how to use players with unique skill sets. Van Ginkel is a really good pass rusher, very efficient, and he has the ability to not only blitz from multiple alignments, rush off the edge, he can also drop in coverage and play run defense. You can feel really comfortable about him doing a lot of different things. And he's also a good effort player. And there, I was watching the game he had against the Dallas Cowboys, and he's on the other side of the field, and Dak Prescott is rolling out to his left, and he's on the right, and he sprints across and gets the sack. Like, just little things like that, it all adds up. And I'm a really big fan of that move. Plus, it's at a very good cost for the Vikings, especially when you consider what an edge two is going for nowadays.
Right.
Like, edge two, you're looking at $10 to $15 million. Well, this year he's going to cost, I think it's $3.5 or $4 million on the salary cap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take that all day. So far, I'm at about a B plus, A minus for this Vikings team. I would have preferred a different player here, different player there, but their approach and how they have gone and attacked their needs and been able to try and figure it out. And they chose not to overpay a guy like Christian Wilkins, which I completely understand. I think Grenard is a better fit than Danielle Hunter, even though Hunter is a much better player. Yes. For how Flores wants to attack and how he wants to be blitz heavy. Hunter's not great off the ball. Grenard is amazing off the ball. Mm-hmm. And getting quick penetrated pressure is so key to this blitz heavy package. And Grenard fits that bill. I just really like what they've done. Could they have done more? Absolutely. You can always do more. But right. What they've done so far, it's opened up what they can do in the draft outside of quarterback, where they don't have to feel pigeonholed to take X, Y, or Z position.
So how much do those two guys on the edge now, one and two, how much do they change this defense schematically as far as what Flores can incorporate and do? Because, I mean, he did a great job. I will go to my grave saying that in 2023, Brian Flores essentially at times worked some miracles and taking a defense that looked absolutely atrocious, and it became competitive. But, you know, you always felt that there were some things where he had to come up with some shortcuts. I feel like Van Ginkle and Grenard are going to put him in a position to now implement things that he would like or would have liked to use but felt hamstrung in doing in 2023. So, Forno, how much more do you think that Brian Flores can basically do what Brian Flores wants to do based on those two moves?
I think it's going to make it a lot easier now, especially when you're talking about how Flores likes to attack. He likes to be very blitz heavy. He likes to get aggressive, bring pressure. You get cornerbacks who can play more man coverage. And once you do that, it's going to make things easier. And you don't have to play that shell behind it, which that obviously worked for a while, but right. is not going to work consistently. You still got to get guys who play man coverage really well. I don't know if Griffin's that guy because he's played mostly a cover three scheme during his career, but Murphy can play man coverage. Booth theoretically can. We'll see if he can rise to the level that we thought when we took him in 2022. Evans isn't a man cover guy. He is a great zone corner, and he knows how to use his size and length to his advantage in those areas, but he just doesn't have the hip fluidity to be able to maximize that. But with these edge rushers, I think they are a better fit for this blitz-heavy package, and you could argue that Van Ginkle and Grenard is better than Hunter and Wanham, despite Hunter being the better player of all right. four of them by a considerable margin, just because I think Van Ginkle on the other side, I just think he's a lot better than Wanham. And your baseline for success for those two guys, I think, is much higher.
Mm. Roscoe, go ahead.
Tyler and I speaking a lot of the same language here when it comes to value and position. So I'll start with this. Row the boat, Sky Yuma. Go Blake Cashman. Yeah, first off, you gotta love the story. There you go. Local kid from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Used to be the Vikings' backyard. Played his college ball at Minnesota for Jerry Kill and PJ Fleck. Drafted in the fifth round by the New York Jets. This is where it gets a little interesting. Fifth round is where you kind of start to get to take a flyer territory on a guy where I think you want them to make the roster, but it's not the end of the world if they don't. You see it all across the league every draft. Draft in the fifth round, only played in 14 games, multiple stints with the Jets on the IR. Then signs with the Texans, same thing, doesn't get a lot of run in year one. However, year two with the Texans, specifically what he was able to do just tackling, over 50 solo tackles, 106 total tackles, notched a couple of sacks. Just another player that I think is going to be deployed in Brian Flores' system the way he sees him. So the positives, if we can believe in what we saw last season, saying that he hit his stride and he's still ascending as a player, for right now, for only slightly less than $10 million guaranteed mm-hmm. over 3 years, that could be a steal for the Minnesota Vikings. And you're getting a linebacker who can hopefully help in the run-stopping game where the Vikings have had issues the last couple of years. And last year, despite only having one interception, he was tremendous in pass coverage. The only real downside to Blake Cashman is the injury history. Even last year, his breakout year, he played in 14 games. He still missed a few with injury. I'm going to echo a lot of what Fordo said. We all have our own players that we like, that we wish a team would sign, but it's not always that easy. But when you look at the process of what the Vikings are doing, still maintaining a lot of flexibility to spend a lot of money next year, allow themselves to basically, maybe when they are picking in this draft outside of the quarterback position, just take the best player available and see what you got. I like what they've done here. They also haven't hitched their wagon to really anybody that's going to constrict the cap down the road. They're going to be very cap compliant and in a great spot next year. Overall, I'm going to back up what Tyler said. I'm going to go with a B+. Again, it's just a bridge quarterback. I don't know how much I love Sam Darnold. I do think he will surprise. I think he'll be okay. This is if he plays. This is the best spot he's ever been in, where he's going to be given an opportunity to start at least for a bit. I'm not sure that's the route I would have went as the bridge quarterback, but I think at this point you have to trust KOC that he got a guy he feels comfortable with. So my guy is Blake Cashman, and I'm going to give him a B+ for the offseason so far.
Tyler, thoughts on Cashman?
The one thing that worries me about Cashman is the late breakout, and he didn't really have that great year until year five, which, I mean, as a fifth round pick is fine. And I loved the contract structure, and I think we're going to see this a lot more often with Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. Yeah, it's the same as Josh Oliver. Year one, basically fully guaranteed. Year two, basically fully guaranteed. Year three, if he stinks or isn't going to be worth that year three money, $2.5 million in dead cap. So it's a relatively low cost for the Vikings to take the chance on getting Cashman to play at that same level. And I like it. And if Cashman does play at that same level, it's a hell of a deal for the Vikings. And if Asamoah ever becomes anything in the NFL, then you have all of a sudden have three linebackers you can trust. And that's a great thing in this day and age of football.
Yep. And they also look towards decent buys off of guys who have shown upside but been hurt too. Cashman, case in point, Grenard, case in point. So he played and started 15 games last year, but his first 3 years in this league with Houston, his games played went 13, 12, and 8. So like, again, if Grenard had played, you know, let's say 16, 16, 17, 17, that price tag is a lot more, but he's got ability. He looks good. And you're probably getting a slight discount there. So, I mean, yeah, Kwesi he's looking for deals, but I don't quibble with that because, Forno, of what you just said, which is he's getting deals on contracts. And the most important thing is, as good as Rob Brzezinski is as the Vikings cap guy, what did Rick Spielman continually ask Rob to do? He asked him to structure contracts that were not nearly as palatable as you just explained.
Yep. So like the can down the road.
Yep. So there's a definite chess game here. And I appreciate that. I am going to go with the guy that I'm most excited about, and the guy, because I think this is a fascinating test case for Kevin O'Connell, Sam Darnold. Now, do I think he's going to be great? No, not necessarily. But here's what, and I asked O'Connell this at his presser, and I asked Darnold this. You were on the Jets and Panthers. Those aren't exactly sterling teams. Like, you were drafted high, and then, as so often is the case, you were put into an environment that wasn't exactly great. And now, has Darnold disappointed? 100%. Not trying to absolve him at all. But I think part of what the process of signing him to a one-year contract was, guys, is this. Kyle Shanahan and O'Connell are buddies. They talk. Darnold went to San Francisco last year, and he sat and learned a lot, one would think. When he got a chance to play, he was not a train wreck. Why? Because San Francisco is not a train wreck. Mm-hmm. Do I think that Darnold is the long-term guy here? No, I don't. Absolutely not. But as I like look through the options of who the Vikings could have turned to, and I thought, you know, why wouldn't they take that guy? He's played more, or he might be a more veteran backup guy. It occurred to me that Kevin O'Connell might just want to take a stab here. Hey, can a guy that Kyle Shanahan, who we all know for his faults in big games, is a very good offensive coach, got his hands on, and he sort of started the mold a bit. Can Kevin O'Connell now, and Darnold, there is a good chance he's going to start a decent portion of 2024, and if he does, that's fine with me. Can he can Kevin O'Connell now continue that with Sam? I have no clue. I don't know, but I'm excited to see it because I give O'Connell a lot of credit. For as much as Kirk Cousins played really well with O'Connell, O'Connell rubbed off on Kirk. Like, he did a lot of things right there, right? Mm-hmm. So what I'm fascinated to see now is, can Kevin O'Connell take a guy who's certainly not Kirk and a guy who's been, you know, for the most part a flop, but he's going to put him in a stable environment. He's going to give him a stable football home. I think that this is going to be one of the most interesting things to watch, in addition to the fact that the Vikings almost certainly are going to draft a quarterback and develop that guy. But just as far as a secondary story, and I would give the Vikings a B. I think they've done a really good job. Hunter being gone does hurt, but Tyler's right, which is, and I would never say that Grenard is a superior player. I do think he is a better fit. I also like the fact that they have focused on the defensive side of things. Like, Brian Flores, to me, deserve this, right? Like, he came in last year and he's like going through all the pieces and it's like, okay, I'll work with this, I'll work with that, I'll work with this. But he did a lot of patchwork. And I love the fact that the Vikings, without spending a ton, have gone out and got Brian Flores at least pieces to his home that probably are more what he wants from a decor standpoint. So B for the grade. And I am so curious to see what possibly Kevin O'Connell can do with Sam Darnold.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Judd, just a quick thought on what you said on Sam Darnold. We've all kind of alluded to it, but we haven't really said it. The buying low on guys that have a chance to give you a really good return on the investment, there's no better time to do that than this offseason with a lot of the one-year deals, or in the Blake Cashman case, not a ton of guaranteed money. Because let's be honest, I don't think any of us would be surprised if Sam Darnold started 17 games next year and the Vikings went 9-8, 10-7, got a wild card spot. I don't think any of us would be surprised. But also, there's no real expectation to win next year. So it's a good year to maybe take a flyer on some of these guys and see what they can do. The quarterback position is a little bit different because at some point, no matter how good Darnold is, you're going to move on from him. But right, these other guys, yeah, why not get him a deal, get him in here, take a look at them and see if they're guys that are going to be a part of this 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, when hopefully if you hit on your quarterback, you have a really good roster that's ready to contend for a Super Bowl year in and year out.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, thoughts on that?
Yeah, Darnold's likely going to get the year that Baker Mayfield got with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if it absolutely flames out, then you're likely going to have the rookie that can step in and be able to man the ship from there. Darnold has a lot of ability, and it's never been a question about ability. It's always been a question about, can he actually use it effectively? And with this situation that he has, this is the ultimate situation for a quarterback to come in and thrive because of all the tools, all the support and infrastructure,
right,
just set up for them to succeed. If Darnold can't hear, he probably never will. Cool. And that's the way I look at it. I think it's a smart signing. Could you argue that you prefer Drew Lock, Jacoby Brissett? Yeah, I get it. But I think the success that he had in the one game he had with San Francisco, and he did show some improvement from his time in Carolina, I think it's a smart move.
Question for you guys. What does your gut say? How many games, without knowing quarterback, logically they're going to take a quarterback in the first round. What does your gut say? How many games we'll see him? I think Tyler kind of hit the nail on the head. I think the Vikings would prefer that Darnold just maybe starts all 17 games and keeps him in games and gives him a chance to win. But maybe they would go to the rookie if for some reason you're 3-7 and out of the playoff race. But for both of you guys, what does your gut tell you? How many games do you think Darnold will play in next year? Or not play, start.
Right. Forno, what do you think?
6 to 8 is probably my guess. There's a chance he starts them all. There's also a chance he starts none if the rookie comes in and just lights it up and shows that they're ready. CJ Stroud showed that he was ready. Anthony Richardson showed that he was ready. Like, I don't know if Darnold has to start any games. He could also start all of them. I really don't have a great read on it until we start getting reports for how that quarterback is performing during mini camp, offseason, and training camp.
I think you absolutely 100% nailed it. I don't think it has a thing to do with Sam. I think it has to do with the kid. So like it's not. And let's go back, as difficult as this can be, let's go back to the McNabb-Ponder year and examine the flaws there. Okay. So the Vikings get off to a terrible start. McNabb is just cooked. Like, he's out of shape, blah, blah, blah. But if you guys recall, there in Chicago, I think it's a Sunday night game. It's a primetime game, though. They're at halftime. And they're playing terrible, and they put Ponder in. I don't think O'Connell does that. Like, I don't think that was a Les Frazier, I'm sort of coaching for my job here. You know, I don't know. I don't necessarily have the support here. I got to win some football games. Let's put the kid in. And you know, the other thing too was, if you guys recall, Les and Rick were not on the same page. Les wanted a veteran, and so they went and got McNabb coming out of the lockout. And Rick wanted to draft a guy, and so he got Ponder. But they were never in agreement on the necessary cultivation of a quarterback. And what they did was about as counterproductive as you can possibly be. They basically took a guy, a veteran, and we're like, well, he can't win, so perhaps the kid can. I very much expect, while I don't think that they're always in lockstep, I very much expect Kwesi and Kevin to be on the same page here. So, like, I never expect this to be, wow, Darnold's not any good. Let's put the quarterback we drafted in. So I think everything here depends on one thing, development of the young man. I don't think it has anything to do. And if Darnold's terrible, here's the thing, too. If you're 8 to 10 games in, and you're a disaster, one, I don't think it's productive to put the kid in. And two, if you've kept your 2025 first, you might just say, let's continue to play this thing out until we feel the kid is set to play. The worst thing is, as Roscoe said, and he's right, the expectations are pretty damn low. We get a high draft pick. And that's not tanking. That's just common sense at that point. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I also think, too, I think Kwesi and KOC, I trust them enough to know that they did their due diligence, where if they have to go to Sam right away and say, hey, about that starting gig, I think they know they have a guy who's at least, quote unquote, going to be a team player. He may not like it. He may not be happy, but he also knows he's going to make $10 million and he'll probably be a good teammate and hopefully help with said rookie quarterback as best as he can, that's not going to be an issue. I think they went into this knowing the guy could play all year. He might not play at all. So who can we logically get that can do that? But also, if they're not going to play, not cause any problems. Sure. And I trust that KOC and Kwesi did their due diligence on that with Sam Darnold.
All right, Roscoe, let's get to comments from the YouTube.
You commented, we read it. Is this a ransom note? Now we're talking about it. It's Purple Access's comments from YouTube.
I will unmute my mic here and I will give you guys some comments.
We've all done that.
MN Sports Guy 123 says, if we get Mayor McCarthy, we kind of alluded to that. Kwesi gets an A+ from me. What would make the Minnesota Vikings 2024 draft an A+ for Tyler Fornes and Judd Zolgad? Tyler, why don't you go first and then kick it to Judd?
Well, let's start with realism. The Vikings only have to trade up to 5 for Drake May, and somehow McCarthy, Daniels, and Williams go in those top picks, and you still somehow land Drake May. That would be my ultimate win. But in reality, I just want the quarterback to hit if the quarterback hits, no matter who it is, I really don't care who the guy is per se. Personally, based on my evaluations, it's Drake May, and I don't think it's very close. He would be my target. But as we talked about on Purple Daily earlier today, if you think it's McCarthy and McCarthy ends up hitting, I don't have an ego here. I don't care. Just give me one of them and have them hit, and I'm a happy guy. But an A plus would be, hey, you get the guy at 11 and you still have 23. That would be the ultimate win. It's probably not going to happen. But we also didn't think Justin Fields had a chance in hell to fall to 11 in 2021, and he did. So there's a lot of variables here, but getting the quarterback and making it work, and that quarterback is a franchise guy, that's about the only thing to me that would turn it into an A+.
A+ is so difficult. I mean, an A+ is so because it's not just you, it's things breaking your way. It's a pie in the sky feeling about things. But yeah, I would say this: if they can get up into the top five and get Drake May or McCarthy falls, that's an A+. And I like them both. But my thing is, you know, there's enough, and I don't know I buy this necessarily, but there's enough mocks that have McCarthy falling where there's clearly a split on him. Drake May, it feels like, is pretty much a certainty to go top five, if not top four, top three. So I would say the A+ only happens if you either get McCarthy to fall to you or you go up and you get Drake May. Both of them are tough. And the team, by the way, the team that I don't trust is the Giants. Like, the Giants are at 6. If I'm not mistaken, Daniel Jones, who was signed to a rich contract, thanks to the fantastic work of one Ed Donatell. But I believe the Giants can sever ties with him after the season, and it'll hurt, but it won't hurt as much. So like, it makes a lot of sense that the Giants would say, screw it. Look, we're drafting 6. Let's use that pick to get a Drake May, to get McCarthy if they like him. So I have a very small window for what qualifies as an A+, based on the fact that there's so many things that probably have to go exactly right.
Tyler, I'm going to give you props. You said something that I say all the time. I trust the Tyler Fornices of the world, the Thor Nystroms, the people who spend a lot of time looking into draft stuff, not nearly as much as you guys do. I always tell people at the end of the day, we won't know if they got it right for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know what quarterback I want them to take. I just want to know that a year or two down the line, they took the right guy or got the best guy they possibly could have with the situation that they were dealt. So whether it's JJ McCarthy, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, somebody I'm not even thinking of, I don't care. Just get it right. And a year or two from now, let's all feel good about what you did on draft night.
But this is why O'Connell's here, though. Like that's the thing, is there was a, you know, I think there was a warranted distrust of Spielman, because if you look at how that fell, he struggled, and Teddy's story was too bad. I will say that, like, that sucked. But beyond that, like, Spielman could not identify a quarterback, to the fact where he gave the first fully guaranteed contract, I believe, in league history to Cousins, based on the fact he threw up his hands and said, okay, let's, and we now know that Zimmer said, don't do that. And Rick still did. So I really think that if we were to do a pie chart of employment on O'Connell, 70% of why he's here is to get this right. And that's a huge chunk, but it's that important. So like, when we talk about they have to be right, I will say that is it. If O'Connell whiffs here, it's going to be, I think, even more devastating than like when Spielman did, because the fact was, I just didn't trust him by the end of the day. O'Connell, I'm trusting to get this right.
Mm-hmm.
The Blackhawk crew says, what I will remember most about Kirk Cousins, they are as follows: lining up under guard against San Francisco, the 4th-and-8 checkdown, and the king of contract negotiations. Now, we're told numerous times, Purple Daily, too negative on Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is gone. Stop poking fun at him. So Tyler and Judd, and I'll make Judd start. No tongue-in-cheek here. I want your favorite positive Kirk Cousins moment with the Minnesota Vikings?
Playoff throw to Thielen that led to the Rudolph touchdown. I mean, that was a dime in a playoff game. That's also, you know what, to that game itself, I have fond memories of, because that is, for all that it felt like Kirk and Zim pulled apart, like it always felt like they weren't on the same page. And that was a game where it rarely came together perfectly. Zimmer's game plan defensively against Drew Brees and the Saints was genius. That's the game that Griffin and Hunter basically moved to D tackle spots at times. And then it was clear the Saints were flustered by that. And then Kirk throws that dime. So, but that pass in particular to me is one, because that was, for all we criticize Kirk about pressure, right? And in pressure situations, pressure games, that's my top Cousins. Wow, that was a hell of a play moment.
For me, it's two different games. And the first one, I'll admit, it probably gets the live bump from me. And I cover professional wrestling as well in the world of pro wrestling. Some matches just hit you differently when you see them in person versus when you see them on TV, just because you get like the atmosphere and stuff. I was at the tie at Lambeau where Kirk Cousins threw the bomb to Stephon Diggs, and then that throw to Thielen to essentially tie the game. That throw was nuts.
Yep.
And that's a throw that if Patrick Mahomes made it, it would be laced all over SportsCenter. Like, that was just special. And you felt like, obviously, Daniel Carlson missed those multiple kicks and it cost us the game. It was so bad that Packer fans were consoling my now wife and I in the stands because they had to watch him miss three kicks. But that was special. And then the comeback against Denver, Adam Thielen's out with the hamstring injury, and Cousins just starts letting it rip to Diggs down the field, and they end up making that comeback. The defense gets the goal line stand. That was, to me, like those two defining moments. I think you can talk about the Colts game. I think the Colts game is a little bit less about Kirk Cousins, and not to say he wasn't great, but I think it was more about KJ Osborne kind of lighting that fire and lighting that spark, and then everybody just starting to buy in and everybody playing really well. Where I think that Denver game felt like Kirk Cousins. It felt like Cousins was the linchpin to really get that thing rocking and rolling. And that touchdown throw to Diggs in triple coverage was, to me, the one really big positive that's going to stand out with that Adam Thielen touchdown as well.
Yeah, I think honorable mentions to a season and a half ago at Buffalo. That was fun. In that same game, the walk-off touchdown that you mentioned, or you mentioned the throw to Adam Thielen against the Saints, the walk-off touchdown pass to Kyle Rudolph, and then, yes, the 33-0 comeback that Kirk definitely played a role in. So there were definitely good moments here. I don't think anybody sitting here or involved with any of these Purple Daily shows would say that it was all void of good moments.
8 fourth-quarter comebacks in a season tied a league record. Like his first year with O'Connell, they win 13 games, and I will say, until the playoff game, well, until the 4th and 8, because statistically he actually was good against the Giants. But that 13-win, 8 comebacks in the fourth quarter season was the quarterback that the Vikings thought that they were going to get from day one.
Final one for you, really boys. Good. He was fantastic. And I think, you know, Judd, very quickly, I think I've even heard you mention this before. I think it's possible up until the 4th and 8 checkdown, Kevin O'Connell went, I think we got our guy. Then he sees the 4th and 8 checkdown and goes, oh, I don't know if we have our guy anymore. I think that could have changed the entire course.
Kevin O'Connell deserves a lot of credit, though, for taking Kirk from, you know, really good statistically, to a relevant, like he was playing really well. Now they got off to a 1-4 start in 2023, but I mean, you know, if they win, or they did win, if Kirk stays healthy, that Packer game, and now you go play the Falcons, it would have been interesting to see, because I do think that I do think Kirk left a situation here that was really good to Kirk. Can't say that for 2018 to 2021.
Final one for you guys. Austin Stewart, 5814, says, The Vikings should wear the classic jersey for every game.
Oh, God, I love it.
Tyler and Judd, I think Judd just...
yeah, I'm done, Judd, yes.
Yeah, Judd kind of taking the question out of my mouth, but the Vikings' best uniform of all time is... Tyler, you go first. Combination, what do you like? What do you prefer? What do you want to see the purple wearing on Sundays?
Objectively, I think the Vikings classic, where it was the throwback, but it's not 100% identical to any one singular jersey that they wore back in the 60s, I think is the objective best. For me, I will always have an affinity for like the 1998 starter jerseys, and I would prefer that they go back to those. I don't think they should wear one singular jersey like for every game. I think it's good to mix it up. The only thing I will say, never, ever, ever wear the Brad Childress abominations again.
Yeah.
That's all I ask. Yeah. That's all I want.
Awful at the time.
The pads were awful.
I mocked players. I mocked them. I covered that team. I'm like, these are the ugliest things I've ever seen. 4-0, so right.
Yeah. I would prefer the stylistically to go back to what it was during the era of Randy Moss, Dante Culpepper, Robert Smith. I would want those jerseys to be the mainstays. But the jerseys we have now are great. I think it'd be nice to see it mixed up a little more. Maybe like the all whites brought back like twice a year instead of just the winter whiteout, like all purples being brought back, throwbacks to those 90s teams, and then the classics. You can do a lot. And let's just be real. Merch sales are a huge part of what makes the NFL successful. If you have multiple jerseys like that to honor different eras, it's benefits for the fan base because they get to see different things. They get to buy different things. It's benefit for the team because they will make more money. It's benefit for you aesthetically because it's just cool to see different uniform matchups. Just don't bring back the Brad Childress era abominations. That's all I want.
Those look like high school. Like those pants were
to high school.
Yeah, they were awful. They were awful. So the only thing that I agree completely with what Forno just said, the only thing that I really like is the darker shade of purple helmets. I really like those.
It's very sleek looking.
It's very sleek. Mm-hmm. The throwbacks that they actually wore in 2000, was it 9 and 10 that Favre with the wore?
Gray face masks.
Just fantastic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All day long. But you know what? The Moss ones weren't bad. But you nailed it, man. Those ones they brought Brad in, was that 2006 with Childress? And it was not Brad's idea, I don't think. Those were just terrible.
Your thoughts on the road, the classic like early to mid 90s white pants, or do you like the purple? I like the purple, but I love the classic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah,
of the white pants, but they also had purple and gold on them.
Yeah, like, oh, you mean the stripe running down the leg?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that, and like that. Maybe it's just me, and that was like my formative age of really getting into the Vikings. Like the first season I really watched was '94, but there were so many games blacked out in those years until '98 that like '98 and '97 really became the years that I became a really big Vikings fan, and I just love those jerseys. Objectively, they are not the best in Vikings history. They're just a personal favorite of mine. Yeah. Mix it up. Have fun. But I know the NFL has rules and regulations against it.
Can't do that all the time.
Yeah, just bring back the 90s ones, please. Thank
Tyler,
you.
Tyler, I think you put the ball in the end zone on that one. You and I are about the same age. I think it's a nostalgic feel. Yeah,
get when off
you think
my lawn. I want to go back to Alan Page, Carl Eller, Jim Marshall. But no, it's funny because the Vikings, for the most part, have done a good job aside from what Tyler said. Those Childress era ones were so god awful, but I don't think besides that in my lifetime of watching Vikings games, I don't think they've ever had another combination that I thought was just terrible. Like it's like, mm-hmm. I like some more than others, but the ones that Forno brought up are the only ones that I would basically just shoot them to the sun and let them burn.
It's like they went to Armstrong High School and just told a kid to make a jersey in Microsoft Paint.
Some people will argue, especially
my whole family graduated from that's just why I used it.
Some people will argue, especially non-Vikings fans, that purple is an awful color, which I disagree with. But to your point, Judd, I think purple, white, and gold or yellow, it's just tough colors to screw up.
Right.
So that, I think, lends itself to the Vikings.
Purple's great. Who says nice purple's uniforms. Bad for sports teams? I love purple for sports.
I think
teams.
It's people who struggle with their masculinity. I think that's
the reason why purple and yellow work so well is because yellow is the primary color, and on the opposite end of the triangle, purple is the secondary color. That's why they work together. That's why, like, my favorite team, the Florida Gators, blue and orange, like because yellow and green make orange. Like that's like just stylistically, those end up working really well. So.
You know what? You know what I miss? The old school LA Kings, purple and
those
yellow.
So
with the jersey that had the king, the crown on it. Oh yes. My God.
Those
you
were
talk
sweet.
About. Bring them back. Bring them back.
It also comes as no surprise on the purple and gold, purple and yellow, whatever you want to call it. Yep. LSU's home uniforms in Baton Good. Rouge. Also beautiful uniforms. Should we kick some extra points, boys?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
These extra points never miss. It's Purple Access's extra points.
4-0, lead us off.
I think people need to calm down about comp picks.
I love where your head is this time of year.
Listen, comp picks are great. But if you have the opportunity to sign like a Shaq Griffin to really fortify your room and make your team better now, I think that's objectively fine to potentially lose out on a third round comp pick. Now, we don't know the contract structure, so we don't know for sure that is completely off the table. But look, comp picks are great, but you can't formulate everything you do off comp picks. If you think you can make that cornerback room better and that might put you over the top for a playoff spot, you do it. And keeping track of it right now is just frustrating. Don't forget, when the Vikings lost Trey Waynes, it went from a third to a fourth round comp pick because he missed the entire season due to a torn pec. You still have to play a certain amount of snaps in order for that third round pick to be there. If Kirk Cousins gets hurt after four games, it's going to be a fourth rounder and we're going to lose a round anyways. So just stay patient with it. Nobody really knows anything about comp picks.
That's what I was going to say. We don't know the formula.
The only person who really knows is Nick Cordy, and he usually gets like 31 of 32 right as far as where they're slotted. So just be patient. It's
love it.
It's a process. Just be happy that the Vikings made their team better.
It's like a relationship. You're a comp pick counselor, Forno.
Hey, you know what? I am here for the people every week on Purple Daily on Draft, every other week on Purple Access, and sometimes you invite me onto the flagship show. I'm here.
You're
for
all
the
over
people.
The place. You're all over the place. Roscoe, what are you thinking?
Our comp pick expert analyst Tyler Fortas.
He's right, though. We don't know a thing about him.
No, you never do. And then it just at the end, they're like, "Oh, you're getting a third round pick. Oh, you're getting a fifth round pick."
Right.
If you guys, I know a recipe for a meatloaf, but I still have no idea if it's going to be good or not.
Sometimes, if it's somebody else's meatloaf too, you have no idea what they put in it. You know, they're all
mystery meat, baby.
Oh God, that's funny.
If you guys followed the NFL and the competition committee, they may finally be getting something right, or at least a tweak I can get behind. It comes in the form of the kickoff in the National Football League.
Please.
Have you seen this?
It's the same thing that the XFL did, except I think they moved it 5 yards closer to the kick instead of the returner.
So their proposal is basically, everybody is now lined up basically across the 50-yard line, but you can't move until the returner catches the ball, touches the ball, or it lands in, we'll call, the dead or drop zone. In theory, this is supposed to help kick returns. I don't love that it's a little gimmicky and not at all what we're used to, but I think it's so much better than the current alternative. Mm-hmm. I don't like taking kick returns out of the game. It's very exciting. Special teams, whether you like it or not, is supposed to roughly be a third of the game. It's important. It's exciting. I think fans want to see it. So if this is the solution to get more returns back in the game and what can potentially be one of the most exciting plays of the game, let's do it. So my extra point is the competition committee may be getting this right, but now the owners, by a vote of 24 to 8 or more, need to approve it, which my gut says they won't. But I would love to see this. It's only for a year. I would love to see it for a year.
That's so, this month, right?
Yeah.
That's
next week, I think.
They're going to vote.
The really nice thing about that in the XFL, zero injuries, 100% return rate.
Really?
Zero injuries. Well, most of the injuries end up coming from all the force generated by running down the field.
Sure.
Yeah. So you take that out of the game and it's just like a normal blocked play. They had zero injuries on kickoffs.
And I think over a 90% return rate, or right about 90% in the year that their year two that they did it.
I think the rule is that they have to return it unless if it goes out of bounds, it goes to like the 40-yard line.
Yeah.
But they, like, there's, you can't fair catch it. You can't touch back it. It's keeps the play involved in the game and it makes it safer for everybody.
Does
that bring the kick returner back?
They have to catch the ball between the end zone and the 20, anywhere in that space.
But so, I mean,
you're talking the position?
Like, yeah, well, I'm saying, like, is this fundamentally easier to catch the ball because it's not as far? So, like, more guys can return kicks. Is this still a sort of specialized job?
I think if you have a really good one, you're going to keep them around.
Okay.
Because if, like, on average, let's say you catch about 5 kicks a game. If you have a Cordarrelle Patterson, why are you getting rid of that guy? He's right. Now going to have 5 opportunities to score a touchdown from that kick every single game, theoretically. So over the course of a 17-game season, that's what? Like 75? Or it's like, sorry, it's 80.
That might preserve a job now.
Yeah. Kenny Wongwu?
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Like, Keyshawn Nixon was the All-Pro the last 2 years, the Packers slot corner, and then he proved that he could play slot corner too.
Yep.
Like, that guy's going to make $6 million. You don't think he's going to return one or two with 85 opportunities? He may return 5. And I don't, like, for the guys who are really, really good at it, I don't think that's absurd.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, my extra point is this. I have a question. Isn't this fun? You know, for all we fear quarterback, you know, oh my God, who's going to play quarterback? So-and-so's gone. Who's going to blah, blah, blah. My question is this. Isn't this fun? We've got the draft to talk about, and the Vikings might take a quarterback. I don't think the Vikings in their franchise history, which started in 1961, have ever drafted a quarterback top 10, but they might now. They might get in the top 10. Darnold has been signed, and we don't expect a lot there. But Kevin O'Connell, he is like a guy that showed up for his first day of pottery class, and for 2 years they gave him the pot, and it was made. And he's like, I guess I can sort of change this and take the lid off here and there, but there's not a lot I can do. Now he's got something in the kiln, and we don't know what it is. And the future of this franchise rests on that. And yes, that's somewhat scary, but it's also a window of opportunity for a franchise that's never won a Super Bowl. Isn't this exciting to see where this goes? I think if you're a Vikings fan, sure, there's some trepidation. Sure, there's some fear. But do you know what the payoff could be? And Kevin O'Connell was brought here for this moment. You know, it's like Herb Brooks, 1980, the great speech before the U.S. played the Russians. You were born for this moment. You are here for this moment. This is your opportunity. This is O'Connell's opportunity. I think the next month, and I think the past few weeks, have been as exciting and fun as anything because of the unknown. That's my
experience. Don't fear the unknown. It's not that scary.
And John, well, and for the fans that are scared, Forno, this team is still going to try and win games next year. Now, maybe the quarterback play will be so bad and inexperienced they only win 4 or 5 games. I don't think that'll happen, but they always try and win. With the Wilfs here, they're going to try and win. So it's entirely possible. Just because you draft J.J. McCarthy or Drake May doesn't mean you're going to be 4-13 or 5-12. Again, talked about the beginning of the pod. They could win 9-10 games. Roster's pretty darn good. The quarterback's the great unknown, and it's very important. But they're also going to try and win games next year. And if they don't, it's a part of the process. Trust the process.
2025, guys. I got my sights set. 2025. Great stuff, boys. Roscoe, thanks much. Again, Tyler, check out his own personal Vikings YouTube channel, Vikings First and Skoll. Great stuff on the draft as well as the team. Appreciate his time as always. We'll talk to you soon.